BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Lauren Laverne, and this is the Desert Island Discs podcast. Every week, I ask my guests to choose the 8 tracks, book, and luxury they'd want to take with them if they were cast away to a desert island. And, for rights reasons, the music is shorter than the original broadcast. I hope you enjoy listening. My castaway this week is Professor Alice Roberts. She's one of the most popular science communicators in Britain today. Her BBC programme, Digging for Britain, attracts millions of viewers, and she has 11 series under her archaeological tool belt. In her role as Professor of Public Engagement in Science at Birmingham University, she views sharing science with everyone as her moral responsibility. Her work as a scientist and writer brings together established and emerging disciplines, from anatomy, archaeology and anthropology, to paleopathology, the study of ancient diseases, and archaeogenomics, the fusion of archaeology and genetics. She uses her discoveries to shine a light on our collective past, offering new answers to questions including whether humans and Neanderthals interbred, that would be a yes, to when plague arrived in Europe, that would be a lot earlier than we'd imagined. As for her own story, she trained as a doctor before her obsession with bones took her into academia and then into television as a specialist on Time Team. She says, "Ultimately, I'm interested in how science and technology can be used with a strong dose of wisdom to make the world a better place." Professor Alice Roberts, welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to being cast away on this island.
Oh, you need the break, having done all that. So, Alice, you're in a very interesting position as a scientist who studies history. You're kind of looking to the future and the deep past at the same time and bringing together new technology with ancient knowledge. I wonder what your favourite thing about working in that way is.
I think it is the meeting of different disciplines, and it is really putting me out of a job because my actual area of expertise is looking at the bones and diagnosing ancient diseases from what I can see in human remains, sometimes using radiographs to help me do that. But very often I'll be looking at a bone and I'll say, I can see that this bone was infected. I can see that there's a plaque of new bone on the surface where the bone cells have been reacting to inflammation, but I don't know what that infection is. And so I would just write a non-specific infection. And then my archaeogeneticist friends come along, take a little scraping of it, go away and tell me precisely what the bacterium is that has caused that infection. It's just incredible.
Alice, you are such a lover of bones that you even have a favourite one, and it is the clavicle, the collarbone. Why is it your favourite?
It is a beautiful bit of human anatomy, I think. And then it's got this incredible backstory because it ossifies, so it turns to bone in a really weird way. Most of the bones in our body ossify by forming little cartilage models first, which then turn into bone.
Okay.
So the little cartilage models are forming when you're in utero. The clavicle does this weird thing where it just ossifies out of embryonic tissue. It doesn't have a cartilage model first. And this is a clue that the clavicle was once part of a skull, but you have to go back a very, very long time in evolutionary history before you find it back in the skull. And it's in your great to the power ex grandmother, probably about 500 million years ago, who was a fish. It makes sense because it was where the front fins, the pectoral fins, attach to the base of the skull. So our limbs, our arms are evolved from fish's fins, and they've dropped away from the skull. And in doing that, they've pulled away this bone.
And it's not, it's just been left behind.
It's been left behind, yeah.
I mean, for a bone that has been, captured in photographs and portraiture for centuries is one of the most erotic, you wouldn't kind of think fish's skull. It's not the backstory I was expecting.
No, but I love these stories. I mean, I love that depth of evolutionary history within the body. It's just brilliant.
It's time for your first music choice today, Alice. What's it going to be?
My first choice is The Pixies, and it's Monkey Gone to Heaven. And I remember hearing this for the first time on a jukebox in a pub at the bottom of Park Street in Bristol with my friend Catherine. And I was blown away. It reached inside me and grabbed me by the heart and filled me with this incredible passion for music. Pixies and Monkey Gone to Heaven. So, Alice Roberts, let's go back to the start. You were born in Bristol in 1973. When and how did your love of science begin?
I think I was always interested in biology in particular, how living things worked. I mean, this seemed to me to be like the biggest question there was in the universe. And I was given a microscope when I was quite young, and I was quite obsessed with drawing all sorts of things down the microscope. I remember drawing bees' wings in great detail. There was never a distinction for me between art and science. The two things went together. But I think archaeology, although I didn't anticipate that my career would take me off in that direction, I was always interested in archaeology, digging up little bits of pottery in the vegetable patch in my parents' garden. And I think I was 8 when I was taken to Bristol Museum to go and watch this extraordinary thing. I think it was very ahead of its time, that in a room somewhere in the university, researchers were unwrapping an Egyptian mummy, and there was a live feed to the foyer of Bristol Museum. And basically, it was very difficult to get me away from that because I was utterly, utterly entranced by the unwrapping of this mummy and what those researchers were going to find. And so I think that was already kind of sowing the seeds of a real fascination in archaeology, but in the human bits of archaeology.
You have said that as a young girl, you struggled with being a scientist at school. What did you mean by that?
I don't suppose it wasn't so much science, but I was bookish, I wore glasses, and I did get bullied to within an inch of my life at primary school. And it was physical bullying as well as kind of verbal.
So you were hit, they hurt you?
Mostly kicked in the shins.
I mean, did anybody else notice what was going on? Did you get help from your teachers?
No, not really. No. And I think my parents thought that any kind of intervention would make it worse. So it was just something I put up with.
Were books a refuge for you from what was happening in the playground?
I think so. I mean, I loved factual books, but I also loved fiction as well. And I loved disappearing into those other worlds. And I think that was a bit of an escape for me, definitely.
So that, in a way, maybe felt more vivid because of what you needed it to do for you.
Yeah, I would have loved there to have been a door in the back of my wardrobe, I think, to disappear off into Narnia.
Alice, why don't we take a minute for some music? Disc number 2. What have you got for us next?
I've got the Sisters of Mercy with Temple of Love. Now, when I started to put together my discs for the Desert Island, my lovely friends, Wendy and Fiona, and we've been friends since university, and they said, well, you can't not have the Sisters of Mercy. Come on, Alice. It was all you ever wanted. Whenever we went out dancing, you'd be going up to the DJ going, please, can you play Temple of Love?
And I think your grandmother helped you achieve the perfect goth look in those days. What did she do?
My paternal grandmother, I remember her wanting to crochet me a little top. And I was quite excited by this because it was going to be holy, which is, you know, part of the look.
That was the whole look with long sleeves and the hands tucked away,
Anyway, so I think she was quite keen on it being pink. And I managed to encourage her to think of it being black. So she crocheted me this black top. I've still got it. And she crocheted me this black top. And then I think she thought it was still too austere and that she might just weave a little pink ribbon around the bottom of it. And I was like, no, no pink.
The Sisters of Mercy
no pink.
Do not wear that. Temple of Love, Sisters of Mercy. Alice Roberts, your father, Alan, worked as an aeronautical engineer. Your mother, Wendy, was a teacher.
How do you look back on family life when you were a child?
It's tricky because I became estranged from my parents more recently. And I think that, you know, during that whole process, I've kind of gone back and thought about what my childhood was like. And I think that one of the things that has struck me about it certainly is that it was very strict. And my mum was not kind of emotionally available for me. I was very lucky to have a wider family. So I had a grandmother who I saw pretty much every day, actually. So I'd walk down from school to my grandma's house.
Was she your mum's mum, dad's mum? Yeah, she was my mum's mum.
And she was a very warm person, somebody I could confide in. And equally, actually, my aunt, so my mum's sister, we were very close to their family. I was very close to that family. And again, she was a kind of incredible source of emotional support for me, especially when I was a teenager. I think it was when I was a teenager that things started to really fall apart for me at home.
That became difficult. So you said your upbringing was very strict. What was behind that? Was it an attitude, an outlook? Was it religious?
Yeah, I mean, religion was part of it, but I think it was wider than that. I just found it quite difficult to be my own person. And, you know, music came into that. There wasn't really any music in the house, and any music that I was trying to listen to was kind of frowned upon. But then lots of things were frowned upon. Boyfriends were frowned upon. It was difficult to be me. But, you know, since I became estranged from my parents, my mother died. My mother passed away. And I've kind of given myself the permission to go back to thinking about earlier stages in my childhood and happier memories. You know, my parents both gave me things. So my dad inspired a love of science and interrogating the world. And my mum was a teacher, mostly in primary schools, and really focused on art. And I remember doing lots of art with her when I was a kid. So maybe that's what she could give me.
So you became estranged in 2018. How did it happen? Why did it happen?
The previous Sunday, I'd done an interview with a newspaper about becoming president of Humanist UK. And my mother had responded to that interview without talking to me at all. First of all, with a letter to the newspaper, and then following that up with quite a frank interview as well. It was awful. I mean, I had no idea. And I had seen my parents the previous weekend and actually taken them out for lunch. And then I was just settling down to watch Strictly on a Saturday night when the editor of the newspaper rang and told me there'd been a not terribly supportive interaction with my mother. And that was really difficult because I didn't know what the nature of that was.
Oh, so, I mean, what's going through your mind? How do you feel in that moment?
I felt like my world was falling apart around me. And I remember waiting up until midnight to see the newspaper being published online. And it was, yeah, it was incredibly difficult. And it's really difficult
talking about it,
actually. And I think at that point, I just realised that the relationship I'd been wanting to work, you know, I wanted that relationship to work. I wanted affection. I wanted approval, actually. And I think I realised at that point that I was never going to have that. And so I decided to make the break at that point. And I think it was the right thing for me, and it was probably the right thing for her as well. I wish things had been different, of course. I wish things had been different. I think my mum, I know that she was quite depressed at times, and that kind of played into it as well. And I think that played into guilt for me as well, because I knew that she was depressed. So I kind of felt that I had to be able to sort of put up with what was happening to me. But then eventually I had to walk away.
So as you said, you had to cut off contact at that point, and then your mother died last year. I know you were still estranged when that happened. How did you navigate that time?
It was difficult. I mean, I knew that she was dying, and I did say to other family members that if she asked for me, I would have gone to see her for her sake. But I didn't see her. She didn't ask for me. And I was very sad, obviously. You know, this person who's part of my life has gone. It's interesting. I mean, I think I'd already done a lot of grieving for that, the relationship that wasn't there. And the only way I can deal with those kind of moments and those kind of feelings, I think, is going off for a walk or going off for a kayak. I went for a very long kayak paddle on my own. It was interesting because the waves that day were a little bit rough, and that's what I needed. I needed to be fighting against the ocean.
Yeah. All right, Alice, I think we'd better take a moment for the music. It's your third choice today. What are we going to hear and why?
This is a beautiful track from the video game Journey that was composed by my wonderful friend Austin Wintry, and this is Apotheosis. And we won't understand this just listening to it now, but when you're playing the game, the music is the emotional backdrop to what you're choosing to do. And if you choose to do something adventurous, the music will start ramping up underneath you. It's just, I mean, it's so clever. But I also love playing video games.
Apotheosis from the video game Journey, composed by Austin Wintry. So, Alice Roberts, you loved biology when you were growing up, and by the time you were 11, you'd set your heart on becoming a doctor. But not long before you went to medical school, you were actually involved in a very serious traffic accident. What happened?
Yeah, I got knocked over in Bristol crossing a road, which is now pedestrianised. I like to think that's because of me. And I remember very clearly being hit by the car, and then being carried down the road by the car, went over the top of it and then fell off the back. And I remember lying on the floor and I couldn't talk or move, but I had a very strong conviction that I was okay. And then obviously went off to hospital. I had a really badly bruised face and I think I probably cracked a rib. But apart from that, I was kind of all right. But it was one of those moments where it wasn't until quite a while afterwards, you know, sort of probably hours after the actual accident, mm-hmm. that I suddenly had that terrible realisation that that could have been it.
You know, having had experience of something like that, did that strengthen your ambition to become a doctor? Did it feed into that at all?
Yeah, I think it did. When you do experience illness or injury and you're then very grateful for all the people who are looking after you when you're in hospital. And, you know, as a 17-year-old, I was looking ahead to me being one of those people.
And you did become one of those people. You went on to study medicine at Cardiff and then worked as a house officer doing paediatric surgery. And I know you loved that. What did you enjoy about it?
I loved working with children. I used to do my ward round on rollerblades. I loved the craft of the surgery. You know, you were part of the team was helping them to get better, and that was just incredible. I mean, I loved medicine and surgery, and I would have been very happy doing that as my career.
You said that you did your rounds on rollerblades.
I did, yeah.
Just to go back to that, how did that end up happening?
When I was on call, I was in the accommodation on site at the hospital, but it was still actually quite a long way from the hospital itself, and there were underground tunnels that ran from the accommodation into the hospital. And it struck me that the best way of getting down these underground tunnels quickly when your bleep goes off in the middle of the night was to stick rollerblades on and go rollerblading in. And then once I'd kind of worked that out, I decided that I would keep my rollerblades on for ward rounds. I don't think you'd be allowed to do it nowadays.
The kids must have loved that.
They did love it.
For now, I think we better have some more music. This is your fourth choice today. What are we going to hear next?
Well, this is the Smashing Pumpkins with Cherub Rock. Really difficult to choose one track, but this is definitely the one that would get us all rushing onto the dance floor.
The Smashing Pumpkins and Cherub Rock. Alice Roberts, alongside your work on the wards, you taught anatomy to medical students at the University of Bristol. Now, you thought it would be a temporary job, but things didn't turn out that way. What happened?
I mean, I kept my GMC number open for a long time, mm-hmm. thinking, I'm just doing this for a while, and then I'll go back to my surgical career.
Oh.
But I stayed at Bristol University teaching anatomy for 11 years.
There's a little note of regret in there. Is there? Am I picking that up correctly?
Yeah, I think there is, because I had decided aged 11 that I was going to be a doctor. And I think it is really difficult when you've trained. It's a vocational training. You've always had that destination in your mind. And so to accept that I was being, I don't want to say being pulled, because it's me making the decisions, but I was definitely being moved in this other direction. And I think I would have been very happy to have stopped in anatomy and gone back to surgery at any point. But I was equally happy to become an anatomist.
What did you love about the world that you were discovering?
I mean, I love the subject itself, and then the research I was doing looking at old bones. I mean, for me as a medic, when I first learnt how to lay a skeleton out in the basement of the old Bristol Royal Infirmary, I was thinking, how, you know, what can I tell from a skeleton? This is a patient, effectively. I can't take their medical history. I can't take any bloods. There's so much I can't do. But actually, there's so much you can do. And so it was the fact that there was so much information that I could extract from those bones that really intrigued me, really drew me in.
Alice, it's time to go to the music. Your fifth choice today. What have you got for us next?
My fifth choice is about a band that I absolutely love, the Foo Fighters. But I've actually chosen the collaborative version of Times Like These by the Live Lounge All-Stars, because it was such an amazing demonstration of how music could bring everybody together when we were in the throes of the pandemic.
Times Like These, performed by Radio 1's Live Lounge All-Stars, featuring, among others, Dave Grohl, Dua Lipa, Celeste and Chris Martin. Alice Roberts, in 2019 you became the president of the charity Humanists UK. That aims to increase public awareness of humanism. What made you decide to take on that role?
I had been brought up in quite a religious household, and I decided aged 15 that I didn't believe any of it. So I became atheist. And I never really liked that term, because it then feels like you're defining yourself by an absence of something you never thought should be there anyway. And that actually my whole take on the world is that it's a natural place, and that, you know, we can understand it and we can hope to understand it better using science and all of that. So it's a kind of it's about a kind of rational scientific approach to the world. But there's something more than that, because it's also about, you know, how to be as a human. And that's how I feel about humanism. It's not a club. It's not a kind of, you don't have to sign up to it. You don't have to join Humanists UK. But it feels to me like a very kind of natural approach to the world.
While you were president, you were supporting a campaign to end state funding for church schools, and that brought with it some criticism for sending your kids to a church school. What was your response to that?
I was quite open about this with Humanists UK, actually. I was quite open about the fact that if you are in a rural area, very often you don't have a choice.
And was, of course, that your situation?
Yeah. And of course, what most parents want is their children to go to the local school, so your children are part of the community. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be driving your children miles, tens of miles away to school every morning. And also, you don't want to be forced into the situation of, well, if you have the means, to send them privately, just so they don't have to go to a faith school.
Did you have to think carefully about whether your kids should take part in collective worship or singing hymns at school?
Yeah, I mean, it's a conversation with my children, really. So in the end, we did send them to a church school for the early part of their primary education. And there were things there where I would go into the school to just say, well, when you're telling them to pray, please could you ask them rather than tell them, invite them, or, you know, tell them that they could do something else, meditate, whatever, have a moment to think for themselves. I mean, parents can choose to remove their children from things like collective worship, but that's quite socially divisive, I think, because this is when, you know, these are moments in the day when the whole school is coming together. And so you're excluding your child, or the child is excluding themselves from something which is, you know, socially important as well. It's a tricky thing to deal with at the moment. And I don't think we've, you know, I think the situation is far from ideal.
So your thirst is not just for knowledge, it's for meaning as well. I wonder where you go to find it if you don't have that spiritual dimension in your life.
This is probably quite controversial. I think that, you know, some atheists, agnostics, humanists would say, well, we're definitely not spiritual. I would say I am a spiritual person.
Right.
Because I find myself moved by nature. I love being out in nature. I love contemplating the deep past in our landscape and thinking about all the generations that have been in these places that we now walk in before us. I think that art and music and nature are what move me. And I think there is what you might call a spiritual dimension to that.
It's time for some more music, Alice. Disc number 6. What are we going to hear next?
Oh, this is Sugar by System of a Down. I love System of a Down. I mean, they're very, very strange, I think, in a brilliant way. It can be quite aggressive at times, and then it can be absolutely beautiful. And Serge Tankian's voice is amazing. It's operatic. And the lyrics are just crazy. And I do like a crazy lyric.
System of a Down and Sugar. Alice Roberts, in 2010 you started presenting Digging for Britain. Now, there have been 11 series so far, and very often this is history of ordinary people, their stories.
Yeah. Archaeology is not just illustrating history, it is another strand of evidence, and it is showing us people that we don't necessarily hear about in the history books. And I've been lucky enough to excavate some burials myself. And I remember an Anglo-Saxon burial that I excavated, which was an ordinary woman. She was an ordinary woman. As I brushed her bones and exposed her skeleton, I could see what remained of this person. And what's amazing with the early Anglo-Saxon burials is that you often get objects in the grave as well. And so she was buried with what looked like little muddy brown beads. But when you washed them, were these intense colours, and they were beautiful little glass beads. You know, it's not an important archaeological discovery, but it's a real intimate connection between me and this other person.
And we've talked quite a lot today about death and bodies, and I wonder if you've given much thought to what you would like to happen to you one day when life is over. You know, have you given your own final resting place much contemplation?
I think I've spent so long learning from the bodies of others that I think what I would actually have to do is leave my body to medical science. But there's a bit of me, because I do have a mischievous streak, that wants to be buried.
Here we go.
That I would like to be buried in a Bronze Age style kist burial, so a little stone lined burial.
So is this like
position.
A short, imagine like a short coffin, like a little, almost a box, but made out of stone?
Yeah, well, you dig the hole in the ground and then you would put stones to line it. So slabs of stone to line it.
Okay.
And then I'll be in there in a crouched position with a little Bronze Age style beaker. And the intent here is simply to confuse archaeologists of the future.
So just horseplay.
That's yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's time for disc number 6, Alice. What have you chosen?
I'm quite an unmusical person in terms of not being able to make any music myself. But I am absolutely overjoyed to be surrounded in my house by people who play music. And I think part of what made me fall in love with my husband was him playing music. He's a brilliant guitarist. And my children love music, and they both play piano. And my daughter just passed her grade 3. Proud mum moment with distinction. And then this was one of the pieces that she was playing a couple of months ago, and it's just absolutely beautiful. This is Phoebe playing Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, from the film soundtrack composed by Ryuichi Sakamoto and performed, Alice Roberts, by your daughter, Phoebe. So you've got two kids, a daughter and a son. And as someone who spends a lot of time exploring and thinking about our ancestry and history, do you feel a deep connection to that through adding another link to the chain yourself by becoming a parent?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's interesting. When I had my daughter, Phoebe, there was a kind of intellectual thing which struck me in the moment, which was that I felt myself to be part of this chain of life, going back and back and back and back and back, you know, mothers of mothers of mothers of mothers all the way back. But there was also something that I was quite worried about, actually, up until the point that she emerged, which was that I didn't know how I was going to love her. And I didn't know what that was going to be like in the moment. And I fell in love. And I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting. So I've fallen in love three times in my life, my husband and then my two children. And it was almost like somewhere inside me, this little cupboard had opened and there was all this love. And then I was worried, of course, when I had another child. I thought, is it going to happen again? Because I'm slightly worried now that there's just one cupboard with the love in it. And then it did happen again.
Well, I'm very glad that you discovered all of those feelings inside yourself, Alice, of course. But I'm sad to say I'm actually going to be sending you away from your lovely family and to the island soon.
I know. Really mean.
Who knows how many castaways will have been to the island before you? I wonder how long you'll leave it before you start digging about, excavating, trying to find out.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be less focused on that than using some of my research into ancient technologies to actually help me survive on the island. So I'm going to be pretty focused on making myself tools.
Good point.
So I need to find some good stone because once I've got a nice source of something that flakes nicely, like flint, then I can start to make all sorts of flint tools. I'm not very good at napping, but I'll get good at napping.
We're going to let you choose one more disc before you go, Professor Alice Roberts. What's it going to be, your final choice today?
When Digging for Britain rebooted, and we were coming back onto BBC Two, and I really wanted it to have different music, and I wanted to have some more lyrical music. And then Robert McFarlane got in touch with me about one of my books and said that he was enjoying reading it, which is always lovely when an author does that. And he said, oh, and by the way, my friend Johnny Flynn likes it too. And I was just so excited because Johnny Flynn did the music for The Detectorists. And so I said, well, I don't suppose Johnny might be interested in doing the music for Digging for Britain. And it turned out that Robert was also interested because the two of them were working together on music with Robert writing the lyrics that was inspired by heritage and archaeology. And so we ended up with this beautiful piece of music that included actually some of the stories in that first series of Digging for Britain as we came back onto BBC Two, series 9, I think it was. And it's so perfect. It's Coins for the Eyes by Johnny Flynn and Robert McFarlane.
We dig for the gods that leave no bones, for the ship a sail in a sunken sea, vessel aloft in a sky of stones, the famine road and the merchant's key. Come and search for we who search and look.
Coins for the Eyes, Johnny Flynn and Robert McFarlane. So, Alice Roberts, I'm going to send you away to your island now. I'm giving you the Bible, the complete works of Shakespeare, and you can take one of the book. What will that be?
Well, I'm not having the Bible because okay. I'm a humanist.
Of course, you don't need to take the Bible if you don't want to, but I can offer you another book of your choice to take with you. What would you like?
I would like to take George Eliot's Middlemarch. It's a very humanistic novel. And I also love it because it is about ordinary people. And it is about the small choices that we make in our lives that are really important.
You can have a luxury item too, Alice. What would you like?
I'm going to take my kayak. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing to be kind of at that level on the top of the waves. I think people have been moving around in small boats for tens of thousands of years. And so I'm looking at the coast in a way that my ancestors would have been very familiar with as well. And it's just my happy place.
Well, Alice, I'll let you have it for those reasons, but you definitely can't use it as a means of escape. Now, finally, which one track of the 8 that you've shared with us today would you save from the waves if you needed to?
It's got to be my daughter playing Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. That's going to stay with me.
Professor Alice Roberts, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
Thank you for having me.
Hello, I hope you've enjoyed my conversation with Alice. We'll leave her to relax in her happy place on the water. We've cast away scientists and broadcasters Professor Brian Cox, Dame Maggie Adair in Pocock, and archaeologists including Professor Glyn Daniel. You can find these episodes in our Desert Island Discs programme archive and through BBC Sounds. The studio manager for today's programme was Steve Greenwood. The assistant producer was Christine Pavlovsky, and the producer was Paula McGinley. The series editor is John Gowdy. Next time, my guest will be the scientist, Professor Tim Spector. I do hope you'll join us.
Hi, I'm Izzy Judd, and I'm quickly dropping in to let you know of an incredibly calming podcast which I think you'll love. The Music and Meditation Podcast is a place where we press pause and give ourselves some brain space to step back from life a bit. With the help of inspirational guests, wonderful guided meditations and stunning music. Honestly, I think you'll really enjoy it. Why not give it a go? Join me, Izzy Judd, for the Music and Meditation Podcast on BBC Sounds now.